Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
Welcome to another episode of the For Love and Money podcast. My guest today is Nimity Zappert. Nimity is founder of an ethical gifting business called All of the Good Things, and she's also chair of the Fair Trade Association of Australia and New Zealand. Now, before founding her own enterprises, All of the Good Things and Authentic Selling, which is another business that Nimity has, Nimity worked for over 25 years in corporate. She was in senior management in the software industry, and she worked across a broad international landscape: Africa, Middle East, Central Europe and Russia, Scandinavia, Asia, and the Americas. Now, this gave Nimity amazing experiences exploring the world, and clearly she is a traveler at heart. But these experiences also highlighted the extreme contrast in her living and traveling circumstances and those of the people she saw in her travels. Nimity's passion comes through in this interview, her passion about using her business experience for good. Her travels and work experience sparked a passion in the fair trade movement, and she currently volunteers as the chair of the executive committee of the Fair Trade Association of Australia and New Zealand. She's also an outdoor enthusiast. She enjoys hiking, exploring new cities, art, and camping. Now, in today's interview, we explore the importance of relationships, the emotional bonds that we build with other human beings, not just friends and family, but through business. Nimity talks about fair trade being the antidote to modern slavery, but our conversation also reveals that it is actually so much more than that. It's about moving away from transactional bonds to emotional bonds. And in the process, it's about building more human businesses and reconnecting to our humanity. I absolutely love this conversation. It has inspired me to dive deeper into the fair trade movement. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And I hope it inspires the same for you. Nimity, welcome to the For Love and Money podcast.
Thank you, Carolyn. Great to be here.
I'm really looking forward to our conversation because we're talking about a couple of organizations. So we're looking through the lens of a couple of organizations. But before we get into it, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on what is the role that love has to play in business?
I think it's actually far more central than people realize. And not just in the context of what it is you're selling or what it is you do as a business, but if I think about my work life, right from when I started out as a young person and the different sort of roles that I've had, so much of my memories and actually my development and my learning came through relationships. And many of those relationships are actually people that I'm still friends with now and have formed, you know, lifelong bonds. And that includes people that were my boss, people that were my colleagues, people that were maybe even across a desk in another business. And so I think there's a lot more to that than we often credit. And we sometimes think that these relationships are more superficial, but actually I think they're much deeper than we recognize. And that role of which is a form of love is hugely important in terms of how we all grow and develop as individuals throughout our career. And that flows on then, I think, into how we do business. So if you're around people that are treating you well and respecting you and helping you to grow, that naturally impacts the way you go about your job and the way you think about business and the way you think about what business should be doing. And I think it's actually far more central than we all give it credit for.
Yeah, that's a lovely perspective. And the whole sort of relationships philosophy, I guess some relationships you place more value on than others, right? Where you've got a shared narrative, you know, alignment of values, potentially shared beliefs. Yes. And those are emotional bonds, which are the strongest possible bonds that you can ever nurture, aren't they? So yeah, it's a lovely perspective. I was looking at your website, All of the Good Things, and I came across something that just made me smile so much in your About section, where you talk about how you'd done a lot of traveling, how, you know, how all of the good things came to be. And I'm going to quote you here, right? So you talked about how you traveled widely. And then you said, sadly, I was also confronted with reality of extreme poverty in many of the places I visited. I was also struck by the fragility of our natural world and how without care and attention, it is being slowly destroyed. All of the good things is my way of sharing my love for this amazing world of ours. I hope to make it easier for us all to care for and protect our planet and the people we share it with. Oh, that just spoke to me so powerfully. I love that. And
thank you.
The minute I read that, it was like, wow, love is the basis of this business.
It is. And that, I guess, that love for our world is something that I really, you know, I do love traveling and I love exploring new places. And I love, you know, one of my favorite things in the world is to go to a city I've never been to before, which is getting increasingly difficult because I've been to a lot of cities, but just wander around and soak up the atmosphere and enjoy it. And I also love hiking and getting out in nature, because I really think that we do live on this amazing miracle of a planet, and it's incredibly beautiful. And I, you know, you, not just the natural beauty though, like this amazing, you know, diversity that we have of people and cultures. And, you know, I love going to art galleries when I go to a city, because I think you often get a really good feel for the cultural sort of context of the place that you're in. And yeah, I really do love traveling and love the world. And so I think when you see people in poverty or in pain, you know, when you're traveling, I mean, that really touched me emotionally, particularly when you first see it. I think coming from a wealthy country like Australia, it can be very shocking. And it was also doubly confronting because I was there staying in 5-star hotels, traveling around in, you know, really nice cars, going out to beautiful dinners. And, you know, I really remember I was on this is when I was back working in IT, you know, in that sort of world where there's, you know, good money and all that sort of stuff. And I was in Mumbai, my first trip to India, and I was in a car. And when you're traveling through Mumbai, you actually, even though there's some really wealthy parts of the city, you often have to travel through all these different parts of the city where there's huge, huge crowds and slums and things. And I just have this really strong memory of this young girl doing somersaults beside my window, trying to impress me. She was really young. She would have only been 8 or 9. And I said to the man in the car, I said, should I give her some money? And he was so embarrassed, you know, like he didn't know what to respond. And I said, and so I didn't, and we drove off. And I always regret that. I always regret not having stopped and just given this girl some of my time. And I think, you know, I've had many experiences like that. And at some point I was just like, you know what, I've got to do something about this. I can't just be a witness. I actually need to get active. And that was when, you know, after being in sort of that big international role and coming home to Australia, that I was like, I was really on the lookout for, okay, a group of people and movement that I felt was actually going to be doing something active about actually helping to make a difference and make some change.
I love that. I love the action, the activism, you know, that you were compelled to do something. I think so many people feel that absolute, you know, this is not right. Most of us feel that inequity, but not everybody actually follows through and does something about it. So so huge kudos to you. And so you left your career in big corporate IT. First of all, tell us when was this, and give us your backstory. We've jumped straight into it, which is great, but give us some of your backstory. Tell us a little bit about you, Nimity.
Yeah, so I grew up in the Shire in Sydney. So, my dad's English, so I've got a British passport, which has made it easy for me to travel, which has been great, living in overseas. And I had my first taste of traveling straight after high school. I was an exchange student, went to Austria, and dropped out of uni. So that was something that was a bit different, I think, on my journey to a lot of people. And I think this sort of came from this sort of constant looking for adventure, looking for change. So I did a fair bit of traveling over the years, but in terms of my career, I found that, you know, I started in telco and ended up in IT, and I was very lucky, you know, coming back to that earlier conversation about love and relationships. I guess that I found a really lovely business that I worked for at the early stages of its growth, and a lovely team and a great manager that enabled me to really grow and develop. And I worked for that business called Sophos for, you know, all up was about 10 years. It was about 3 years here in Australia, and then had a break and went traveling, and then went, and I was based actually in Oxford in the UK with them for a few years. So that was really formative years for me. And it was with that business that I started in that sort of international sales role, where I was traveling all over the world, selling to different businesses in different countries, which was amazing. And then came back to Australia sort of in the late 2000s and started working for other businesses here then, and had a bit of a taste of startup. And yeah, so it was very much, you know, a very typical kind of career, I think, in IT at the time. It was an exciting area of the world to be in, because it was a lot of smart people. There was, you know, it's all new tech, all new things happening all the time. A lot of travel went with it, which was, you know, right up my alley.
Sounds perfect for you.
Yeah. Well, it was perfect to a point. It was lacking the purpose and the meaning. And so it was about 2008 that I came back to Australia. And that was when I was, I really felt like I needed to search out this something other to actually be more active. And it was around that time that I started getting involved in the fair trade movement and volunteering with fair trade. And so that has been a part of my life pretty much since then, in terms of on and off volunteering, and then got more and more involved as time went on.
And was this, can I just ask you, was this before Mumbai or after?
That was after.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So Mumbai would have been 2006, something like that. So yeah, so I was part of the classic great resignation in the middle of COVID. Had just been with a new role for about a year or just under, where I, you know, they'd flown me over to UK, Japan, Singapore, and it was back on track with all that sort of big life. But like many of us, I reconsidered things through that time and realized it was now or never in terms of getting on with this sort of passion that I had for wanting to be more active for the fair trade stuff. So yeah.
Fantastic. So all of the good things, that was the start.
All of the things. Yeah, that's right. And I guess, you know, what a lot of people don't realize about fair trade is that it's also got an environmental focus. But for me, I've never been, to be honest, a great fan that are sort of campaigning for other people to do things, and sort of always trying to say people should be doing this and everyone should be doing that. I'm very much a like, well, why don't you do it? Why don't you actually do it? And for me, that's why fair trade has always resonated with me, because it's a business model. And it's about actually empowering people to build their own businesses as well. So working with artisans and people, producers in disadvantaged communities as respected suppliers, helping to empower them to grow and build their own businesses. And so obviously I already had that context from my volunteer work. And I was like, right, it's time for me to start my own business. And I really liked the idea of, you know, how do I bring these things together? So we don't want to be just giving things to people that they don't want or use, or that are just sort of decorative. I really like the idea of things also being practical and helpful. So all of the good things is really about, the way I think about it is, to your point, Caroline, we all actually have these feelings about wanting to do something and wanting to, what I call, live the good life. We want to actually do the right thing by our environment, do the right thing by the people around us and around the planet. But we also want to live joyfully and enjoy our lives and enjoy and celebrate the planet. And so my goal with all of the good things is to make it easy for people to do that, to find things that they can use in their homes and that they can use to give from a gifting perspective, to help other people on that journey as well.
It's beautiful. I was looking at the website and, you know, we're recording this interview early October. It should come out quickly, actually. Perfect timing for Christmas. And I certainly will be looking at purchasing some Christmas gifts there. I was having a look at it, and there are some lovely ideas, not to mention just buying products for yourself. So I love it. I think it's a very easy way for people to vote with their wallets, you know?
Right. Yeah. And every time, I mean, you know, people have probably heard this before, but every time you actually buy something, you are having an impact. So it's the impact, you choose what impact that is. Yeah. So you can either, you know, support the mass produced stuff that's going to go to landfill, or you can have an actual sort of neutral impact. So make sure that you're not causing harm. That's where to start. But I think we can even go a step further, and that's what fair trade actually does, and actually have a positive impact. So we're actually providing employment, we're actually helping people to grow their communities, as well as, you know, not using plastic. I really minimize plastic in all of my stuff. Even the gift boxes are recycled cardboard, the ribbons are upcycled sari. You know, it's just little things that can actually have quite a big impact.
Little things which, yeah, as you say, can have a big impact and are huge. And I think one of the biggest things is so many people these days, I hear people saying, oh, I'm just so over it. I just, you know, people feel disempowered. They feel cynical about politicians, about big business, about all of these things. And there's this feeling of disempowerment, which is an absolute fallacy. Right? We have power. We have power through our choices. Every choice we exercise is a, you know, a power that we can exercise. And, you know, the choices you make and what you purchase is exactly that. It is your power being exercised. So
I've been asked before, you know, what do you think is the most important or the biggest danger to the world at the moment? And I think it's cynicism. I think if people can't believe that they can have an impact, or if they don't believe that it's possible to make change, that's the biggest concern. Because to your point, you absolutely can, but if you don't believe that you can, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. So so sort of having that belief is the starting point. And that's why I like the idea of gifting as well, I think, because you can actually reach someone with something that they may not have thought buying for themselves. Or, you know, maybe, you know, there's a lot of cost of living pressure at the moment. So sometimes buying something for someone that they wouldn't buy for themselves, and they go, oh, that's beautiful. Actually, maybe I will go back to using soap rather than a body wash that has a plastic container every time I buy it. Or, you know, these lovely kitchen brushes have lasted me for ages. Maybe I'll keep using those instead of getting a plastic one next time. And I think you can have an impact just on your own, not on your own lives, but on sharing and helping that to grow as well.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. So can you tell our listeners, let's go a bit deeper on fair trade, and, you know, feel free to weave in all of the good things in this discussion, because it is your expression of the fair trade movement, isn't it? So people, I think, know the term, but what does it mean? What are the key principles? You know, what is the pitch?
Yeah, okay. So fair trade at its most fundamental is about alleviating poverty through trade, through the way we do trade, which we call fair trade practices. And that starts with the fundamentals of ensuring people are fairly paid, that they have good working conditions, that there's no slavery in the supply chain, no slavery in the businesses that you're buying from, that there is no child labor. You know, so these are basic things that we sort of take a bit for granted in Australia, but unfortunately, a lot of the goods that are sold here are made, you know, with slavery or with very poor conditions. And so certainly fair trade is very involved in the anti-slavery movement. So that's a very big component of it. And for those that don't know, human trafficking and human slavery is still a huge, huge problem globally. There are over 60 million children in child labor globally. And many more adults in human trafficking. So, and this isn't just, you know, people think of, you know, sex trafficking, which is obviously horrendous, but also to, you know, the sorts of things that happen are young person gets offered a job somewhere, they get their passports taken away, they're forced to work somewhere and never able to leave. And that's unfortunately how a lot of things are made in the world that we live in. So fair trade is fighting that, and it is what I call the antidote to modern slavery. And that's really the fundamentals of it. It also goes a bit further to say it's based on 10 principles, but these things are around non-discrimination. That's also important, so gender equity, but also more broadly non-discrimination. It also includes respect for the environment, as I said. So really strong tenets around reducing plastic waste, reducing our carbon footprint in terms of travel miles. You know, we try to have things go by surface, so by sea, rather than air where we can, although in Australia that's very tricky because we're a really long way from everywhere. So, you know, it is a balance. But this is the core principle of fair trade. And then there's also the capacity building, and that's about providing that additional support to grow. So not just get the basics in place, but actually help to build and grow the communities of the people that you're working with.
So fair trade is about helping fair trade businesses to grow their capacity. Is that right?
That's one of the core things. So I guess the piece that maybe I didn't expand on enough there was the very first principle is providing market to disadvantaged producers. So you can imagine if you're an artisan in Uganda. So I actually have a brand called Afribeads, which actually brings in handmade paper bead jewelry and baskets from Uganda. And the women there are a really small group. And there's, you know, you can imagine that if they're just trying to sell at their local market, how hard it is for them to eke out a living just doing these very simple craft, you know, this beautiful work. So what we do as fair trade businesses here in Australia and in other parts of the world is we connect this market with those producers. So we're able to bring in those goods, use them as a respected supplier, and then sell them here in Australia. So we have the great thing that we can access these beautiful artisan goods and also know that the people making them are being supported and well paid.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And how well known is this? Like how much awareness have people got about fair trade?
I think in Australia, not very is the answer. So
you think about chocolate and coffee, don't you?
People think about chocolate and tea and coffee, and that is actually, that's a great thing. And I absolutely recommend that people look for fair trade tea, coffee, sugar, these things when they can. And that is a part of the movement that's very much focused on the commodity side of things. So, and people might be familiar with the fair trade mark that they see on coffee and tea. So the difference there is that that fair trade model, which is on that commodity part of the market, is a very much more structured piece where you can actually say, okay, we're going to be talking about pricing. We're going to be talking about a clearer structure of how we ensure that people are paid a fair price. Because it's a commodity item, you can be clear on what's a fair price for that specific item. So I think that's a great part of the movement and really important to support. What people probably know less about is the artisan piece, which I described, where if you're making individual pieces of art, so whether that be jewelry or a handmade basket, each item that you make is unique. And you have to then look a bit more broadly about how you pay those artisans and how you ensure that the conditions are good and all that sort of stuff, rather than just working to a commodity model. And in that context, fair trade works with what we call a living wage model, where we look at the local living wage in that area, and it's a little bit more of a sophisticated model in thinking that through. But in answer to your question, no, I don't think people know that about fair trade. I think people think tea, coffee, sugar, and a little bit less about the artisan side of the movement.
Yeah, which is really frustrating. And I guess one of the things is, you know, there's such a proliferation of cheap goods.
Yes.
You know, suppliers who you can, oh God, it's ridiculous. You know, the targeted ads that pop up, you know, that track you with that pair of shoes you've looked at or whatever. And the prices, some of these prices are just so, so cheap. Should that be a warning signal to people that
absolutely
perhaps their workers are, you know, not being paid fairly?
Yeah, so I think you really have to stop and think, if you're paying a small amount for something, how much is the person that made it getting paid? And chances are very, very little. So, yes, it's definitely, it's not to say that all things that are low priced are not well, you know, are not ethical, but a good number of them are. And, you know, if you're not sure, you know, that you know, your gut's probably telling you the right thing there.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au, for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. Or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square metre of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square metres by 2025.
I think the other thing that's a bit of a fallacy about fair trade is people think that it's expensive. Well, no, it's not expensive. It's fair. It's a fair price for the work that's gone into what it is that you're buying.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point for people to take away. And, you know, we are starting to see, I don't know if this is wishful thinking, but this whole consumerism movement in pockets starting to slow down as people become more aware of our impact on the planet. And my hope is that, yeah, people will start looking at everything they purchase and questioning it. I know I've started doing that in a big way. and just studying what is said. You know, you see a little symbol that looks like a recycling symbol and you look a little closer and it's not. It yes. looks like it.
Well, there's all those kind of things that you've got to look out for. You know, some things often say they're recyclable, right? And you sort of look at it quickly and you think it's recycled material, and of course it's not. I think as well, asking the question is the first step, as you said. So asking that question. But, you know, I absolutely agree that we want to be, I always suggest that people think about buying less and buying quality. So if you go from that perspective, you're going to get a much more beautiful outcome. You're going to get a better item. And you're also, you know, you're not filling your house with junk. We're not filling the world with stuff that's just ending up in a big tip somewhere. So I think that's great. But also to natural materials, you know, as I said, the jewelry's made from paper, you know, recycled boxes, not using, you know, a lot of people don't realize that nylons and things are plastic. So you actually want to use cotton, silk, wool, you know, if you're buying natural fibers, not only are you more likely to be supporting sort of the people that are making those items, you're also, you know, they're much better for us and for the world.
And I'm looking at the earrings you're wearing and they're absolutely beautiful. And what is the name of that business, the jewellery business?
Afri Beads. So that's a brand under the All of the Good Things banner. Yeah.
Okay. So to the point that you made before, my husband said to me a long time ago, he I don't know if it's his quote or someone, or he borrowed it from someone, but he said, "I'm too poor to buy cheap things." And I love it. It's like, yeah, okay, spend more. Yeah. Buy better quality.
That's right. I mean, I remember the few times where I have, you know, bought something a bit cheaper. I mean, I always try and check the supply chain of it anyway, but they don't last and then you have to buy it again. You know, I have dresses in my wardrobe that I've had for 10 years, you know, or longer. You know, I expect things to last forever. And, you know, I think the idea of, you know, the LBD, the little black dress, you can mix it up with accessories and have a couple of classic items that really can go forever and go anywhere. And again, that comes a little bit from my traveling, right? Because I was traveling so much, you had a few sort of items that you could fit in a suitcase and sort of make them look a bit different with a few different items. And there's a bit of a trick to that. But again, a quality piece always looks good.
Absolutely. And I remember I had a little jacket, bolero, I think it was called, from when I was a kid. It was handmade and it was beautifully stitched, like black, a short cropped with beautiful coloured threads all over it. And I found it years ago. I found it in the trunk and I thought, I really like this. And I wore it out and I had so many comments. So this is a jacket that I had when I was like 8 years old. And I'm wearing it as an adult and people are going, where did you get that from? It's just so cool. Yeah. And there's a real sense of, I don't know, there's such a sense of not pride, but you just feel good, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Eventually it fell apart on me.
Yeah, but that's what I love. You wear things till they fall apart. That's exactly what I do. And I love, you know, I love obviously the jewellery and stuff, but there's something really nice when someone says, oh, I love your earrings. You've got a beautiful story to tell. Yeah. You know, I've been to Uganda. I know the names of the people that made the beads, which they include, you know, on the jewellery and stuff. And that's really special. And I think about their children and are they growing? And that connection is also actually one of the really lovely things about the fair trade movement is, you know, really trying to work more directly with the people that are making what we're consuming and building relationships there. And it's one of the things that we talked about quite a bit during COVID, actually, because of course, what happened in COVID in, you know, a lot of developing countries and in all developing countries actually is, you know, or poorer markets is firstly, they couldn't go to work. So if you can't work in those environments, you don't eat. Yeah. So that was really, really challenging. And then when some of them were able to make, you know, if they're working from home and making the goods, they couldn't ship them because if you remember, all the supply chains were all messed up, so nobody could get stock. And so one of the beautiful things about the fair trade movement was because the suppliers had these sort of long-standing relationships with the businesses here in Australia, many of the fair trade businesses continued to place orders even though they couldn't be shipped to support those communities through that time. So, you know, coming back to the love question, you know, it is that personal relationships. that actually keeps the world going. You know, that's how it works.
There's a beautiful synchronicity in that. We started this conversation with the, you know, that idea of relationships, and we've landed right back in the thick of it here. And it is that interconnected nature and meaningful relationships. So, you know, I love that story you just shared, that, you know, people would continue placing orders because of those relationships, and they valued those people and those relationships and wanted to continue supporting them. It wasn't just about making money out of it.
No, not at all.
And there's nothing wrong with making money out of it, but it's a balance, right?
Go together. I think this is, you know, exactly what I love about your podcast, Carolyn, is that it doesn't have to be one or the other. And in fact, it shouldn't be. I actually think that the best way to do business and the most successful businesses, in my experience, actually have this core of caring. And even if it's not the caring of the outcome of the product in every business, it's the people within the business caring about each other that makes it work. You know, how often do you hear about someone saying, oh, you know, this person that I knew has got this great promotion and that's so great to see, or people mentoring other people in businesses? And that's kind of what's happening in that fair trade relationship as well. You know, you're starting to build a relationship, and depending on the how well developed their business already is, there's a lot of mentoring that's going on in building the business, but also for us learning how their world works, right? So, you know, the group in Uganda that I work with, you know, a lot of the women there are illiterate. They can write their name on the tag and that's about it. But they make beautiful jewelry, and they get together as a group, and they, you know, they run a business. And so I think understanding how their world works, and that things don't always work the way we think they should work, and that's okay.
It really is. And Nimity, it's so interesting, because the vast majority of people, when you tell them stories like this, or when they share stories, it's about those caring moments. It's about those caring leaders or managers they've had. And I think it's a human truth that that's what we value.
Yeah.
And yet we've all been swept along with this tide of, you know, we've got to keep thinking, you know, it's about the economy, and we've got to just keep making money, and we can't stop to, you know, people that are falling behind. It's just go, 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 go. And somehow it's just become, this is how life is. But again, it goes back to empowerment. We have more power than we realize. And if each one of us started exercising that power in little ways, the world would start changing. The world is starting to change. It's already happening.
And I think, you know, I'm a big believer in small actions, and because actually the world is made up of small actions. So when we say, am I having an impact on the world? Well, your world is your world. So if I'm stopping, you know, here, rubbish going into the rubbish right here, that's an impact, you know. So I think sometimes when we talk about impact in this sort of for good space or in the purpose-driven space, people think of big picture impact. But impact is also on that micro level, and it's those micro actions that add up to bigger things. But even if they don't, they're still important.
Yeah.
And I think that impact is also on that people level as well, right? So if you're employing one person and it means that they can send their children to school, that's an impact, and that's an important impact for that person. So, you know, and often that impact grows far beyond what you think it would. So Rosemary, who started Afribeads business, you know, she went there 15 years ago, a bit longer than that now, I guess. And, you know, when she started working with these women in Uganda, they were only able to feed their children one meal a day. And then over working with them for a few years, they were able to not only feed them, you know, each meal, two to three meals a day, they could then send the children to school. And some of those women have now gone on to have those children finish school and go on to do things like go to sewing school and learn skills that they're bringing back to the group and they're bringing back to their community. So there's all these amazing flow-on effects. And if you employ adults and give them good employment, it's not just that one person that's impacted. It means that the children, you don't have children in child labour because they don't need to work because their parents are well paid. You know, it just, the flow-on effects are so much bigger than people realize.
And it's empowering them rather than, and absolutely. Look, I know there's a role for nonprofit agencies and organizations. Sure. I'm not undermining that at all, but you know, the idea of giving them employment, you know, letting them use their skills, it's not just about the money they earn. That's huge, obviously. But it's also about feeling like you've got a role in society.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of the fair trade model as well is encouraging sort of collective models where people get together and help each other and work together. And that's a really important part. And you've probably heard about this before. It's you know, different, you know, regions across the world, quite a few groups work in this way where, you know, And they'll say it's the coming together of the women to work together that's a big part of the importance of what's going on there. Community and connection and learning from each other. And
relationships back there again.
Yeah, it all comes back to relationships. It absolutely does. So I really don't think you can underestimate the power of that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So, Nimity, in what different ways can people support fair trade organizations and brands? And I'm keen to look at it through the lens of, you know, being a consumer, a citizen. I really hate the word consumer, and I'm from a marketing background, right? But as a citizen, but also as a business owner or leader, what can they do?
Yeah, well, there's lots of things that you can do. I guess the first thing is, when you are making a purchasing decision, ask that question: where has this been made? How has it been made? And if you can, look for fair trade goods. So I think that's absolutely at the very obvious one. But more than that, as a business, you could do something like have a Christmas or a pop-up market in your foyer for people to find fair trade and also learn a little bit more about fair trade.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah, it's really fun. And people love it as well because it makes it really easy for them to buy their Christmas gifts. They don't have to go anywhere. And also too, you know, I love to come and talk to people about fair trade and share the message and the journey and that sort of stuff. So always happy to do that. I think the other thing is come and get involved. You know, we have meetups and places where, you know, in Sydney, we just get together once a month and catch up over a drink and dinner and talk about fair trade stuff. And things always come out of that conversation. And, you know, people come and help us and volunteer at markets. And just come along and get involved. And we would love to have you help us.
And build some relationships with other like-minded people.
Exactly, yeah.
Will you be able to, can I share a link in the show notes to how they can join those meetups?
Yeah, for sure. So you can become a friend of the Fair Trade Association, which is $35 a year. And that's basically means that you're supporting the movement and you can come along and join in with all this stuff. And it's really good fun as well, I would say. It's a really lovely group of people. And, you know, coming back again to that relationship piece, I think part of the reason I've stayed involved as long as I have is not only because I believe in the cause, but because I enjoy spending time with these people. So, yeah, absolutely.
That's brilliant. How can people find out about fair trade businesses?
Yeah, so on the Fair Trade Association website, there's a list of endorsed fair traders of Australia. Also, too, if you're looking for commodity products, you can go to Fairtrade ANZ, which is where you would find the list of tea, coffee, sugar. So that's what you can do there. Yeah. And we also do, if people are looking at sort of understanding their supply chain and things like that, we can help people to find, you know, suppliers and that sort of stuff as well.
Okay, brilliant. And the other question I had as you were talking is, you know, These fair trade products, apart from finding them through their own websites, mm-hmm. you know, are there retailers who stock them, like physical retailers that stock them? Or is that something people can do to almost lobby for that to happen?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously we'd love that. We'd love it if you asked your local stores to stock fair trade.
Or council to do a pop-up.
Yeah, so, you know, coming up to Christmas, you might find, if you're lucky, that there's some fair trade markets happening near you. But, yes, we love doing markets. Artisan products are a great thing for a market. So, that's another great way. Encourage markets, or it doesn't have to be a full-scale market. As I said, it can just be a small pop-up in a foyer or something. Yeah, that's a huge support and also a huge way of getting that word out.
I love that idea of a pop-up in the foyer. I think that's wonderful. So all of the good things, we're going to start wrapping up. I would love people to go there, you know, in the lead up to Christmas and, you know, see what's on offer. Is there anything else you want to add to that? Bring them in.
Yes. Yeah, so at all of the good things, we've got some beautiful things there, whether it's for yourself or for a gift. So I'd love you to come along and have a look at what we've got there. I'm always really, really keen to hear what people would like to see and to get feedback on our range. So please do come along and have a look and let us know what you think. And if you're thinking about corporate gifts for Christmas, you know, we can also help out with things like that. That's another great way to support. But just generally, you know, from my perspective, I just really love it when people buy something that they really love and enjoy. So I really hope that that's the experience that you have.
Wonderful. And share this episode with your friends and family, because I think, it'll get people thinking differently. And I'm about to jump on your website and put in an order for those, for some earrings, which I am truly coveting. So Nimity, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the podcast. Any closing remarks? I'll leave it to you to finish us off.
I would just like to say that I really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks, Carolyn. And I do believe that love is really central to the way that we live and the way that we do business. And thank you for the conversation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?